Welcome to another episode of the NPCs Discuss, where we talk about the video game industry, events, history, controversies, and more. On today's episode, we're not shy to admit that we've given our fair share of criticism about games in past episodes. When a feature, modification, or change is promised or implemented in a well-known game series, and it changes the core experience, we're there to talk about it and what its potential impact might mean for the game and games like it going forward. However, as games continue to age and new games come out, the fans of the series look to the devs for more content, more updates, and at the overall health of the game. This can lead to some massive speculation about the state of a game given access to player counts, product roadmaps, and competition. Voices begin to echo about how a game is faring and give rise to the clickbait articles and videos about a game being dead. What has this type of focus added to the overall discussion on games, and how do we best move forward on approaching these topics? Today, we'll talk about just that, with the struggle with a game's longevity. My name is Travis Sherman, and of course, as always, here on the NPCs Discuss, I am joined by the one, the only Kyle Inman. Kyle, what's up?
What's up?
I had to say what's up to you there first.
Yeah.
Because I needed to hit you with that one, because you're saying it all the time. So, what's up indeed is our episode for this week, talking about the struggle with a game's longevity. And I want to start off actually with the tweet that really kind of kicked off a lot of this. And I got to preface this by saying, like, I spend most of my time now for social media on Twitter. So based on all the things that come up, you know, it's all curated things that sometimes say, oh, you might like this. So this is why some of these things come up. But The global editor-in-chief for PC Gamer, Evan Lahti, I think that's how you pronounce his name, L-A-H-T-I, Lahti, I think. He had put out this tweet here. He said, wow, Elden Ring has lost 50% of its players in just 1 month. Rough launch, not enough content. Silence from the developer and no roadmap or battle pass in sight? Dead game? Question mark. And he shares a screenshot of the current player count for Elden Ring, or at least when this tweet was published back on March 24th, showing where it was at its peak of about 952,000 players, and where it's sitting at right now, or at least from when this screenshot was taken, at about 455,000. So you're talking about, you know, around 50%. So he carries on, of course, though, really focusing more on this being a tweet that is satire and really calling out the people who constantly criticize these games, at least for being potentially dead, and who overall focus on things like player counts, for example. So some of the things he has screenshotted here are from like MMORPG. I believe this is like just MMORPG.com. Says this article says New World Daily Active Players. New World Daily Active Players down more than 90% on Steam from record high in September. Battlefield 2042 has lost 70% of its players in 2 weeks on Steam. Here's a post from the New World subreddit saying Sunday, January 30th, a peak of 81,000 players. Sunday, February 6th, a peak of 64,000 players. That's another 24.4% loss week over week. And of course, the one that really is what got me into a lot of this, though, is screenshots of videos from YouTube talking about Halo Infinite being in trouble, or the demise of Halo, or that Halo is dying, a lot of that stuff. And so I think that's really where we kind of kick things off, Kyle, is what do you take at least of some of these initial things that I just read off?
Like, I don't know. I look at those articles and I look at how quickly I can get into a match on Halo, and, you know, it strikes me as, is it dying? I don't think so. I see so many people with so many of the purchases from the store fully decked out every week. You know, you see people that come in and they'll buy out the entire store. If you play with the same person, they might change their stuff every other match. So, I mean, is it dying? I don't think so. There's lots of success with the microtransactions, at least with a certain crowd. Beyond that, there's constantly new players, people that I've encountered that are, you know, level one just in basic play. You know, if it can match you with someone that is necessarily your skill or whatever, or you're playing with someone that has never played it, got a new PC, or God forbid, they just got an Xbox. I know They've been putting out more and more Xboxes. I've seen them more and more in the stores lately. You know, the S's have been available. And shoot, even just the other day, the X's were available pretty much all day on Amazon. So I don't see games like Halo. And, you know, you look at, like, New World. Yeah, you hear about all the negative articles and the negative player count. But there's constantly new content being developed for it. How could they be losing players if they're still able to develop content for it? Why would they develop content for a game that's dying?
And that's my exact thing here, and that's why we're having this discussion right now. So I need to say here, Evan Lottie actually had taken this screenshot from SteamDB.info, and SteamDB.info is a third-party tool that scrapes metrics, information, and data directly from the Steam databases and pulls that all together into a way that sometimes you have to do a little bit of extra digging on Steam to get some of this information, but it puts it all to a nice, neat spot. But one of these interesting things is where people rely on their data to kind of figure out or gauge at least where a game might be at. They really do start off with that player count. So let's kind of talk a little bit about that first. So like SteamDB.info, I've got the link up right here.
Well,
go ahead.
Before we start on that though, I think it's silly to try and preface it with Elden Ring as being the one. And that's why I see his tweet being super satirical. I mean, there's a good chunk of players that are going to get a refund within the first 20 minutes of playing Elden Ring because it's an extremely difficult game. They see the videos and it looks beautiful. It looks like it's really cool, really fun. But then they play it and it's like, oh my God, this is really hard because it's a Souls-like game. And they don't necessarily, they've never encountered that concept or that style of game. So beyond that, you know, there might be people that have given up or need to take a break from the game. I know lots of people that walk away from Souls games for weeks at a time and then all of a sudden they come back and beat it. So
no, and that's actually a very good point. I'm glad you actually talked about that. That is something that a lot of people don't take into consideration for some of these things. And that's why I wanted to really kind of start on the player count, because you are right, is that we do have these certain periods in time, especially for games through Steam, that after you make a purchase, as long as you don't play X amount of hours into the game, then you can easily get a full refund on it. But even with that, a lot of the games that are on the list here right now on SteamDB that are, you know, that are at least up there at the top of the list for player counts, Counter-Strike Global Offensive, that is now a free-to-play game. Dota 2 mm-hmm. is also a free-to-play game. Lost Ark, I think, is also free-to-play. Apex Legends, free-to-play. PUBG, that is also free-to-play. The list literally goes on. And I know not everything on here is, but I'm calling out that there is a lot of it there that you're not actually driving the conversation based on necessarily like how many people actually like put forth the money for a game like this or something. You know, you're focused on who's actually involved with it now. And there have been plenty of other games that have come out since a lot of these other ones have. There are some that keep people going back to playing these games. So a lot of people focusing on the player count just seems so, it just seems so like quick to judge. Like it's, you can't judge a book by its cover. Well, it's like, this is apparently like the preface page in the book. As soon as they open it up, you know, it's like, this is like the little forward part. Once they read that, they think they have a whole opinion on everything. And that's where they make their judgment at. And it's upsetting.
Yeah. And I'm looking at some of the peak players today on some of the games, and it's like some of them wouldn't even, I don't even recognize. Like, you look at the trending games, the top two, I don't even recognize what those games are. I've never even heard of them. Top three, you know? And they're just what's trending. Do you think that that's going to actually affect, you know, what they're viewed as?
No, that's actually a very excellent thing to look at here, too, especially because, yeah, like there's this game here. It's called Path of, you have to forgive me, especially if this does end up being Chinese.
Wuxia,
here.
I think.
Is it Wuxia? Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's
Wuxia. Yeah, it currently has a high peak of in the trending games in the last 7 days at a high peak probably yesterday of 5,600 players, or much higher than that. Right now it has 5,600 players in it. The total peak on it in the last 24 hours has been 16,000. So
yeah.
What about it, though, is like driving people to it? Is it just an indie game that some people were really hoping to see for something? You know, that's very, very likely. I mean, hell, Death Stranding's here on this list as a trending game, too, of all things.
Well, yeah. And,
you know, and
granted, the Director's Cut did just release on PC, but I mean, it's been out on PS4 for how long? And then it was out on PC. And then right after it was released on PC, they released that Director's Cut on PS4. So it's had quite a run already for it to, you know, just have the Director's Cut barely release on PC and it have, you know, success. Obviously, this is a game that has longevity, even for, you know, its massive criticism at launch, you know, being majorly story driven, having nonsensical videos, so on and so forth. And apparently the Director's Cut fixes some of that and fixes some of the fact that, you know, there's very little combat and, you know, some of the difficulty with the game. But, I mean, it's drawing people to it.
It is. And is Death Stranding a dead game? No. It had its point in time where that was the game there. But since Death Stranding came out, how many other titles have come out that have eaten up so much more time? And again, I want to go back to like what I was saying here is like this is only one source of data. This is SteamDB.info. This is looking at player counts on Steam, you know, at the point in time that this webpage was brought up for us. This is not looking at the overall player count for games that are cross-platform. The number of people who are playing Apex Legends on here right now, it says the player count now is 164,000. There is no way that it's just that, because you have to also account for console players. You have to account for players who are playing through Origin or EA Play. You have to account for the people who are playing on Switch. You know, I'm going that way just because of the hybrid console part. It's those types of things that are just missing from here. And a lot of the stuff you actually do see happening is pulling data directly from just one source. You're not bringing everything together to say it, but a lot of that data isn't necessarily out there for you to scrape and to grab and to find. You just sometimes you have to just use your best estimates, and that's why a lot of people will just focus on this one source.
Right.
Not the best choice, but
no,
I see and why, like but saying, I just don't like it.
Yeah, it is just a fraction of the market. It does give you a fairly good perspective on it, but not the greatest perspective, especially when you look at, you know, how some games succeed on specific consoles versus, you know, other consoles. You know, one game might succeed on PS5 and not on the Xbox Series consoles and not at all on PC.
Yeah, that's actually a big part of that metric, though, too, is there more success for this game on a console than there is actually for PC at that point in time. And I will admit, being a PC gamer, one of the first things I do install when I set up my computer, like if I'm doing a whole new build, is Steam. That's like one of the first game environments that I actually sign into as soon as I get a build done.
Absolutely.
And that's been habit for myself for a long time. So I can see why people lean on this to go ahead and get some of those details, because there's not a lot of other easy to get ways to grab that player count. But it's just like any other good scientist is that, you know, or even good researcher is that to be able to make a good sound decision, to make a good sound judgment on what could be happening to something, you're going to go and solicit information and resources from multiple places. You're not just going to stick with one spot. And that's why it really bugs me with a lot of the player count stuff, though, especially because, I mean, he goes on to even say here, you know, that Evan Lottie in that tweet in a reply, he said, you know, Dead Game Battlefield 2042 was one of the 12 highest earning games of 2021 on Steam, according to Valve. And that was in that platinum category that had Battlefield 2042, Valve, Destiny 2, Apex Legends, Naraka. I think it's only part of a screenshot here, but I think that might be Ark. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly which one that is, but it's some of those things though that you see and it's like, wow, okay. So obviously maybe not dead per se, but just like maybe it was the approach at that point in time and some people got let down. I don't know. I'm just using some of that other stuff that he had at least there to kind of illustrate. It's like, sure, maybe something's dead, but maybe not. And maybe the criticism isn't necessarily supposed to be like at this level that it is. Maybe people are just too, you know, maybe us as gamers have gotten so used to the amount of content that's coming out from other games that we expect more from another game, you know, from a completely different game.
And, you know, I can't say that you or maybe you can't say that it's necessarily dead, especially, you know, when they've even come out and said that they don't feel that it's necessarily a complete game. And it's continuously being worked on, just like every other EA game that seems to launch in, you know, a semi-broken state, or, you know, with too much fluff that gets backlash. You know, you like Battlefield, or not Battlefield, Battlefront, look just a couple years back, and that game launched with all the microtransactions and everything, and it was viewed terribly, and its player count was high at first, but dramatically dropped, but then it was fixed and grew its player count. But once again, backtracking to Battlefield, you know, they can do things like, you look at the tweet and it says that it's 50% off or something like that on the tweet. Yeah, 50% off. So $29.99 to pick up Battlefield. But could they maybe also do that because they had so many people pick it up and they just need that little extra kick of funding from new players to push out some patches to sustain those players, to bring their current play or their previous players back, you know, that you know, felt they got burned right away.
That's very possible. For when it comes to like the AAA studios, I'm talking EA, you know, I'm talking Activision Blizzard. We're talking, I mean, we can go with Microsoft, we can go with Sony, we can go a lot of that stuff. When it comes to like budgets and funding things like that, you know, normally you're not necessarily putting a game on sale to bring more players in so that way you can increase the amount of money you need to be able to do all of these extra things. I can see indie devs doing stuff like that, though, especially where maybe they know that their game is popular, the price is maybe a little too high, so they do put it on sale for a little while, and that brings more people in to be able to buy it, and they're able to get those funds up there necessary to pay themselves to continue working on what they're working on. That's maybe the only thing I can see. It's just for the AAA studios, I don't necessarily know if that's the reason why.
I think it's more as like to justify sustaining the game servers and sustaining the game as a service.
No, and I guess that's a better way of putting it. Yeah, is that it's like, are we justifying the amount of physical resources we're putting into this game with the existing environment that we have now? Like, are the players satisfied enough with what we've got, you know, to do it? Or do we need to bring in some other ones who have hesitated on coming into a game by dropping the price for this short amount of time, letting them pick it up and come in? That seems like that's probably more likely is what's happening. I just don't necessarily see that overall, though, as like the true fix to make a game at least feel alive again more than anything. I mean, obviously, for a multiplayer game, you need the players to be there. Otherwise, really, you're just not going to have anybody to queue up with. And like you made the great comment earlier that us going into Halo Infinite, we actually match up really well and really quick. Like, it doesn't feel like we're sitting there delayed and waiting to actually get into a game. And we run into the occasional, like, you know, maybe couple people that we've played in previous matches and that over the course of like playing over a given day, but not necessarily enough to say that we're running into the same people every single day we log in and play.
Right.
You know, it just seems like maybe we all just queue up to the same server well enough. Like, our latency is just enough to say, you guys are going to stick together like this.
Maybe in all the time, I may have been lucky enough to run into the same person out of chance once.
I would say probably about maybe a couple times for me, but that's about it.
And But you also have played competitive more than I do, so you get put into the class, and that also kind of restricts you to a certain player group as well. So, I mean, there is the possibility there.
True. There is also that. But I guess we should probably, like, maybe circle off here of the player count stuff, because that's only kind of, like, a part of it, is that a game isn't necessarily dead because of the player count per se, because we don't really know, and I don't think we'll ever really know what the true player count is on a game unless we can bring all these metrics together, or if something happens to leak out and we can pull that stuff together, or these other companies decide to finally start posting true actual player counts compared to just, like, rough, like, oh, we had 500,000 players in our game this last month. It's like, you know, is that total? Is that concurrent every day? Is that, you know, it's stuff like that we need to know. We need more of those granular details, but we probably won't see some of that in that regard.
You know, in a culture that's so connected, all of our consoles and all of our devices are connected. You know, a great example is, you know, with the Wii servers just recently going down, you weren't able to download anything that you were supposed to previously have, you know, had downloaded that you didn't transfer when you had to transfer it up.
Oh, yeah, huh?
And they just went down. Well, they were down for a week before anyone actually even noticed. So maybe that's the sign of something being dead, is it took a week for someone to check and say, oh, whoa, that's not there anymore.
Yeah, I guess the bigger thing with that, though, is, yeah, you're right, is that it's like, yeah, someone went in to check. But I guess that kind of strays a little farther away, because you're talking about a game console, too. But no, I get what you're saying.
That's more broad. But yeah, like, you can't necessarily say a game is totally dead. I mean, even games that I play are, like, some of the ones that I had when I was a teenager. So they're, like, 15, 20 years old, and occasionally I can still find a game online to play with someone, ironically, and there are players in it. So, like, Unreal Tournament 2004 is a good example. You wouldn't think there'd be people still playing it, but they do. But yeah, off the whole, you know, player count thing, I mean, There is more to look at other than just that. You think about the fact that the overall sales provides to that legacy of what a game can have for its longevity, you know, and where its initial sales can take it, and its trending sales for that matter. I mean, you look at games like Mario Kart.
Mm-hmm.
Mario Kart has consistently been on the Famitsu sales chart top 10 since the Switch launched. And they are just barely this month, I want to say it's later this month, adding in a DLC content pack for the game. And it's basically, the if I'm not mistaken, the same game that was on Wii U, with a couple more racers, and that's it.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, like, it's interesting that you make mention of that. I apologize. I don't know if you said numbers there. Something in my headset cut out. But
no, I said just it's been consistently in the top 10.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm looking at here, is that it's number 2 on the list here, and this is from the Famitsu sales 321/22 to 327/22. So that week, it was all last week, and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe had 18,000, almost 19,000 sales on it for a total lifetime of 4.5 million sales, which that game released in April 2017. We're actually coming up almost on the, 5-year anniversary of that game releasing. That was a launch title almost effectively for the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Because that came out just, like, literally just after the Switch dropped. That's impressive. Really, to say, like, you know, so to speak, it's like, but that's one of those things, is that exactly as you put it, is that the game is selling. The game is actually like still selling there. And it's like, how do we actually judge that a game is dead? You know, if not maybe like how the game is actually selling at that point in time. And those are some things that we don't have real access to when it comes to the overall numbers. You know, I mean, we do have stuff like this from Famitsu, where they like they do list out all the different things. Granted, a lot of it in their list anyway is going to be really focused on the Japan market, given that almost everything in here is Switch, right. PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5.
Yeah, and it is focused on the Japanese market and exclusively on the console market, for that matter. So it is just, once again, one section of the pie of what we see for sales and overall growth and potential of the market. But it does give us a perspective of what people are also playing. And, you know, granted, like I did say Mario Kart, and it does have its console bundles that they do every year at Christmas, but they only make so many console bundles every year at Christmas. You know, they can rechange True. The box art and rebundle it, and they can count it as a sale, but people are still buying it in the off season too.
They really are. Or think about the number of like multiple copies that are being bought in the off season. Mm-hmm. Like if I wanted to play Animal Crossing with my kid on the Switch, I could put Animal Crossing in the Switch Lite, but they're going to have their own copy. Well, you might end up actually going to purchase multiple copies so that way you can all play this game together. It's been the same thing in right. my household, like with Minecraft and Overwatch. We've done that. We've actually purchased several different copies of things like that because we want to play them together. And that's where some of those sales do come in. And I'm actually glad that, you know, we are talking about the sales part, though, too, because I want to go back to something from 2021. Mm-hmm. And this is by far one of the interesting things, because I did the math on this and we talked about it before we started recording, was about Cyberpunk 2077. So according to CD Projekt Red, in this article here from Polygon on April 22nd, 2021, CD Projekt Red confirmed that they refunded 30,000 copies of Cyberpunk 2077. Now, for anybody who may not remember, Cyberpunk 2077 launched to disastrous results, especially on last-generation consoles, because of the state of the game as it was released. All the bugs, all the problems, all the crashing issues, everything. And more specifically, especially stuff on last-generation consoles. And so CD Projekt saw the problem there, and they started to implement a refund process that lasted for a short period of time. Well, that closed out around January, February of 2021. And they revealed that in that refund of the 30,000 copies, that they had sold 13.7 million copies, but only issued the 30,000 refunds. So I did the math, Kyle, like I was telling you here. 30,000 copies out of 13.7 million is 0.2%. 0.2%. Dang. Of all copies of Cyberpunk 2077 that were sold, especially even after everything that happened, 0.2% is all that was refunded on that, at least according to what was reported there. I can't remember if this actually took into account the figures from the refunds on other platforms, though, too. I think it does, but I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, Cyberpunk 2077 is going to be this best thing. It releases... It's a pile of garbage at launch. It really is. And we try to play through it. We try to do some things. We ran into our own issues. And it was still successful. And there were a lot of people who went into it thinking, and I'm sure you and I think we're probably the same way, but don't ask me to really remember 2020. It was one of those things that we expected to be similar to No Man's Sky, at least at launch, that it was going to be just not what was promised. And a lot of people were there thinking, like, is this what we're going to be left with? Is CD Projekt just going to be done with it? Are they not going to be able to actually provide the actual support to this game to make it better? And they have. Their roadmap's been pretty good on getting things back up and running. Still a few issues. But that goes to show that it's like a game can be a pile of garbage. And everybody knows it's going to be. especially after all the reviews and all the other issues out there.
Mm-hmm.
But like, look at that. I mean, what's your take on at least seeing something like that then?
Well, you know, either the gaming community is a bunch of weird cynics and, you know, just nihilists that hate themselves and want to just take the reviews and go, oh yeah, let's run with that and continue to play it and talk crap about it and say how crappy it is. Or maybe it wasn't actually all that bad, and maybe people are waiting for it to get better, and maybe it's still selling copies because people are out there waiting and seeing the improvements and seeing the roadmaps, even, you know, though they shouldn't, in my opinion, be totally necessary. But, you know, people see it and see the effort that they're making, and it's still selling copies, and people were still retaining their copies when they had the opportunity to get the refunds, and obviously it didn't affect them that much. I mean, socially, it was a dumpster fire, obviously, because social media had a heyday. But when it was all said and done, they were still nominated for an award at the end of the year.
That's the big thing. That's exactly like one of the big things there to really focus on with this, though, too, is that was this game really like dead, or was this game like that big of an issue where it somehow, like, you know, it surprisingly didn't escape the, you know, any of the nomination stuff or the award stuff and still somehow got nominated for an award? It's so bizarre. You're absolutely right. And I guess maybe it's not fair to say that like Cyberpunk 2077 was really considered a dead game. Maybe that's not necessarily the fair thing to say. But a lot of the comparisons, though, to Cyberpunk were really focused on what we had seen with No Man's Sky day one, when all these things were promised, all these things were talked about. And then as soon as that game released, it was nothing like what they had promised. And it wasn't that it was full of bugs or issues or anything. It was just it was lacking in the content that they were expecting. And Cyberpunk, on the other hand, had all these things and launched and just broke everything, just blew everything up, so to speak. So,
well, and
I don't know.
The one thing is, it is the infamy that Cyberpunk has, just, you know, its whole path to actually being released, its rocky launch, its climb to success, and its, you know, unstable ground at its success. It'll go down in infamy regardless. You know, it'll still sell in the future because of all these things. You know, at even if a game gets bad publicity, and it gets a lot of bad publicity, it's probably gonna be looked at in the future long time from now. So I you know, look at the way this is just an example, but Preston used to talk on and on about Jurassic the Hunted, and it was terrible.
That really was awful, wasn't it? That's,
yeah.
I forgot all about that. Oh my gosh. I forgot all about that one.
That's a centralized case.
That is. That really is. Or his talk about Untitled Goose Game. That game is never going to be dead for us ever. So I just wish it was on Game Pass again. But anyway, so before we carry on, of course, with the rest of our discussion here, we're going to take ourselves a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to pick up on the rest of this, talking about game longevity, especially this day and age. So we'll be right back. And we're back. So, Kyle, what I want to talk about next, especially with what we've already covered so far, you know, we've talked about player counts being evaluated as to whether a game is dead or alive. We've also talked about game sales, though, too, and, mm-hmm. you know, how many people maybe have purchased the game and then potentially refunded it as quick as they did. And also that games appear to be like absolute garbage, you know, or have so many problems like Cyberpunk, that they still somehow have been able to retain their level of support and ultimately get nominated for a big gaming industry award. Now, what I want to talk about, though, especially where people consider a game dead, is on product roadmaps, more specifically a development roadmap that these companies will put out explaining what is up next for their game, what they're working on now, what they have ideas for, things like that, that kind of end up being measured in what could potentially be considered, you know, a part of the longevity of a game anyway, is like, how long can you support this and what are your plans to continue to provide meaningful content updates? So, yeah.
See, and I think the first time people begin to see roadmaps as a negative thing or as a sign of a game's decline or that it's not doing so well is the first major game to actually focus heavily on a roadmap was Anthem. And Anthem had a rocky start. It was an interesting idea that had interesting portions of the game scrapped early on in production, and then people came to visit to see the game, and all of a sudden these parts of the games or the game was not scrapped, and it was a major focus of the game, and it had to be rewritten about that entire thing. So it turned out that it wasn't so great, and the roadmap ended up a complete failure. And I think that's where a lot of the negativity began to be generated for roadmaps, but that's not necessarily the case. When you also look at something like No Man's Sky, where that game started out as a dumpster fire and actually won an award for how much and it's done and how far they've actually come in development and progressed for their players.
Yeah, that's actually a very excellent point there with No Man's Sky, especially to be recognized for all those changes. But I know I keep on talking about Halo Infinite, but that really seems to be what drives a lot of the conversation about a dead game more than anything. And I feel like that's really where a lot of that tweet from PC Gamer editor-in-chief Evan Lottie was really focused on, though, too. Is, I mean, he didn't directly call out Halo Infinite, but it literally followed in the same chain as a lot of these other recommended tweets that came up talking about Halo Infinite's current state, because we've come to know that Halo games since Halo 3 will launch with multiple multiplayer maps, multiple game types. We get we also get Forge as well too, and then of course for the campaign side we get campaign co-op. Well, that didn't happen with Halo Infinite. We missed out on Forge, campaign co-op, and the map rotation. There's a lot of people who like the maps. There are a lot of people who don't like the maps, you know, and there are a lot of people who want more variety in those maps, especially. They want more change, more of the dynamic side of things to actually occur. And a lot of that sometimes comes from the community working on their own maps in Forge in the first place. So with all these things having been missed and the expectation for things to be coming out, as well as the expectation for these timetables that like 343 has put out on releasing stuff, they've now since made those changes to the timetables again, and they've pushed out Forge. They've pushed out campaign co-op. They actually did. They dropped a whole list of things coming up from feedback that they've received in prep for the upcoming season 2 in about another month. This huge, huge list of changes is them taking in not just changes that they want to see. It literally is making mention of all the different feedback that they've gotten from players on balances, on changes to the way things handle, on the way that on game crashes and bugs, like the things that are actually being reported up and out on things that need to be addressed and fixed. But a lot of people still feel like they're being left in the dark or left behind, and are saying that Halo is one of these games. Halo Infinite is just not living up to its expectations. And I can kind of see where they're coming from, but it feels like there's other things you could move on to for the short term and then circle back around when, you know, when stuff is added back in. Am I wrong? Or, I mean, what's your take on
that? Not at all. I don't think you're wrong at all. The way I look at it is Halo as a whole was rushed. I mean, we got what was complete. We could have got the entire game if players really wanted but it could have been broken, like way more broken than anything we would have seen.
Are you specifically talking about if it had launched with the Series X and S back in 2020?
Or if they launched at, you know, the date it did actually launch with all the content in it, you know, we could have gotten a broken game. You know, it was delayed from the Xbox Series X launch for a reason, because it was not finished and it wasn't ready, and they didn't want the train wreck that happened to Cyberpunk. And I hate to rag on that game, because it has gained ground. It does still have ground to gain, but as with any open world game, you look at Skyrim and it's still broken as hell even after its third major release. And do they fix it? No, people still live with it, and they still play the hell out of it. I don't know. I just feel like that what we're getting is we're getting the most complete, least broken version of the game that they can put out at each time. And the fact that they're actually notifying us and updating us with what players want, not just, you know, what game enhancements they want to make, it says a lot about the team. But that's a lot to put on a person's plate too, to add in campaign co-op, to add in Forge, to also do what the players want, to also, you know, maintain the stability of current multiplayer all at the same time. That's quite a bit of stuff to do.
It is. And there was an interesting thing that came out, though, today as well. Besides the release of the outcomes report that 343 put out in regards to the feedback that they are responding to for Season 2 of Halo Infinite, there was also some discussion. I apologize, as I'm trying to find the post here on Twitter right now, but it was actually shared over from the Halo subreddit. I can't remember exactly where it was, but basically it was talking about how the devs are receptive of the feedback, are very receptive of what they're hearing about, you know, that it's been all talk and no show, that they're not actually putting some things out there that they've been talking about working on. And a lot of the things that people have been latching on to as of late is that, you know, there is this, I'm not going to say big product roadmap, but there is a at least a relative size one. You know, we know we're getting new maps. We know that there's new game modes that are coming out. We're all assuming that there is some sort of DLC for the Halo Infinite campaign that's going to be coming out probably in the next year, maybe. That's just a rough guess based on just, like, you know, some just some things that have leaked out. But what, I can't remember where this is at. Like, I'm still trying to find this post.
Yeah.
What the,
to me, when, I don't know, it, roadmaps almost seem like documents to satiate haters, or, you know, people that are just struggling with, you know, not having enough of the game. You know, they just can't get enough of it.
Yeah. Okay. So I finally found it. I finally found the actual post from the subreddit here. Let's see what he says here. So this is the name of the name here is Sketch343, and he's a 343 employee. So I don't know if this is actually one of the community managers or something, but he says, and on the topic of blogs and updates, let me just say, we also fully acknowledge that we're not truly able to say everything many folks want to hear. We get it. And it's a tough spot to be in all around. Season 2 will be a good step, but there's a lot of work to do, and most of it is going to take more time than most want. This also includes taking more time to have real dates and details we can commit to as the team, continues to work through planning and future updates. For now, though, all focus is on launching Season 2 and charting out a regular cadence of updates thereafter. And even with product roadmaps and stuff, though, is that all these different companies are, like, evolving companies, are growing and changing. You have people coming in, you have people leaving. And that's one thing that people have been latching on here to as a part of what he said. And it's right here as well, too. Right now, the focus is on season 2, and we'll have more to share on that in the coming weeks. Meanwhile, a lot of production planning, costing, planning, hiring, etc. is all happening, which doesn't really lend to detailed regular updates. We understand the community is simply out of patience and, frankly, I think understandably tired of words. We just need some time for the team to get the details sorted, and then we can certainly share as much as we can. So a lot of people have latched onto it, especially with product roadmaps, is that they're feeling like, with Halo Infinite specifically here, is that it's over-promising and under-delivering, because this is 343's kind of like first attempt into the live services foray when it comes to a live service game. And, you know, I can see where maybe some of that comes from, but there is a lot that actually has to go into it, because like, if you want content, they can't just slap together a map, throw a mode on it, and just send it out, because of the number of things that are supported. And also the fact that the game is free to play now, especially specifically the multiplayer side of it, you've got a lot of stuff to account for. The way different computers function, making sure that the Xbox Series S and X and Xbox One can all handle playing the game just fine too. How does it play over cloud streaming? How does it play when you're doing it through Game Pass? You know, is there something else that they have to include to make that stuff work? And
how to deal with cheaters and hackers on every one of the different systems, you know, whether it be, you know, the different versions of Windows, Windows 11 or 10, and, you know, what kind of, you know, hardware they're running, and, you know, on the Xbox One or on the Series console.
Exactly. That's that big part of it. And it's not a problem to have a roadmap to show, like, what you're going to be working towards, but in this day and age, I mean, delays are really expected in the first place, but that's where it comes back to a lot of this, though, is that some people get so hooked on the roadmap that it's like, you promised by the beginning of Q2 2022 that we were going to have all, like, we're going to have all these things here, and you guys didn't deliver, and now you guys just suck. This is exactly where we didn't want you to be. You failed. Apex Legends or whatever is better. You know, it's a lot of focus like that that just is what drives all of those different things that I made mention of, like in that tweet, talking about like all the, is Halo Infinite dead? Is all this stuff dead? It's like, no, it's that consumers, particularly gaming consumers, have started to get into this habit of just expecting so many things to happen at such a quick pace. Nobody's patient enough to actually wait anymore. And it's not like there's other games that you can't, you know, go out and play. Game Pass, that's a whole mess of things to get. You're on PC, there's a whole mess of things for you to go play until that time. It doesn't mean the
and
game is dead.
It's not like there's, you know, unforeseeable circumstances that can't happen, like hackers, like, you know, cheaters that, you know, they have to contend with that might cause a hiccup in their roadmap, you know, whether it be slight or major. You know, why can't the consumers just tell those guys to stop it? It doesn't work that way.
Dude, no, exactly. You're absolutely right. I mean, we've talked about No Man's Sky enough anyway, but that was definitely a game that overpromised and underdelivered, and it took them years to get back the trust of all the different players, and they were successful. Right. Battlefield 2042 was one that overpromised and underdelivered, and there's only like so much hope you can really give for that game to actually be repaired or put into a place where that game does end up being better than it was day one. But again, that's time that has to be put in to be like to do things like that. Halo Infinite's gonna be the exact same way, because it's a whole different game on a whole different console that needs some more, you know, needs that additional emphasis. So if it's gonna take more time, so be it. I just really say, though, at least out of all of it, is that there's other stuff to play, though, still, too. There are other things to take advantage of. Just take a break on it and then come back to it. I mean, that's like my own, that's my opinion on the matter. That's my critique of the entire argument that's been kind of coming up from people about that being dead.
But I do also want to take this scope on it, too. Before we even like try and call it quits for this discussion, is that is a game really dead if players have to continue to talk about the fact that, oh, it's dying, or, you know, is it dead? It can't be dead if it's quite you know, if it's still being talked about, or if we're constantly asking the question, is it dead? If we're still trying to find ways to fix these games or to make them fun, you know, or if we're still curious about, you know, the state of whatever game is in, you know, whether it be Cyberpunk and where it's at on its roadmap, or what new content gets added to Halo, or, you know, what content is being added or taken out of other games on, you know, this or that console, or, you know, this or that cross-platform game for that matter.
Yeah, and I don't know. It feels like the expectations for content delivery, or at least constant content updates and changes and the like, is been skewed so much by some of these other games that have been truly dedicated, like live service games. Not, and I'm talking about games that don't have like a dedicated single player component and then have multiplayer on it though too. But the things that are dedicated multiplayer games, Apex Legends, Overwatch.
Well, and you said Overwatch.
Yeah.
The major question of is Overwatch dead just came up, what was it, a month ago? And it was right before they had, or it, actually it was during their Reaper event that was completely new. It's a new event that they've never hosted before. So is Overwatch dead if they're doing a new event and they're asking the question, is Overwatch dead?
That's a very excellent point when it comes to some things. I mean, I was only, you know, making mention right there of, you know, of Overwatch because it is a live service game, but...
Right.
The way that content keeps coming out for some of these things, or at least is staggered, you know, it's one of those where some things do come out so quick that people are just expecting more and more. And given that we literally have spent the last 2 years, you know, just over 2 years in a global pandemic, dealing with work from home, dealing with having to rearrange our lives around this virus, that there obviously has things to, obviously has to be stuff to, that has to give at some point in time. And as people sit at home, you know, playing more and more games, they're obviously expecting more and more to do. It just feels like the expectations have gotten so high that, you know, for a lot of these games, some of the criticism obviously is valid and warranted, especially with the way a game was either marketed or the amount of hype that they put behind things too, especially for like Battlefield 2042 being the like a real prime example of something very recently. But it just feels like that for some things, it's just that the level of criticism, the level of reach that people take to try to say that something is dead or that a game is just not successful. It just feels like it is. It is really just that big of a reach based on some very small data, like a little bit of data, and not taking the time to actually look at the overall environment itself, especially between what games are coming out at the same time, what games are coming out here just after, what games are coming out in the near future, and what's that impact on player base going to be going forward. It's just such a reach out there for some of these games that it feels like the criticism is just not warranted, at least. Be upset. That's great. That's your right as a consumer. But take it at a certain value that it's like you've got other things you can also go spend your time on as well, though, too, game-wise. And then keep an eye on stuff and come back around.
Yeah. Stuff is ever-changing, especially with the online service games. Games like Elden Ring... It's probably going to be the game of the year. I won't play it because I'm not a fan of the games or that style of games. But, you know, I can't, you know, I was going to say can't not. That's not a what phrasing. I have to appreciate the game itself. The storytelling that went into it with George R.R. Martin. You know, the fact that people are putting out videos continuously like crazy that are flooding my feed still to this day about Elden Ring weapons and locations and secrets. And it makes me want to play it. But, you know, to the same effect, I know it's a successful game. It doesn't necessarily interest me, but, you know, I hate to see something like that be ragged on because it's looked at for one particular aspect of how, you know, it's doing at its current state.
Yeah, it drives frustration, I think, more so like when a lot of that criticism is just shoved in your face, especially, like I said, a lot of this stuff kind of came up because of all the different things I saw in my Twitter feed, all the different things that came up to me as personalized things because, like, oh, you've retweeted some stuff about Halo. Maybe you'd like to see more Halo stuff, and it's just bashing the hell out of it. Like,
and I know that that particular tweet was more satire, but
it did well to prove a point, though.
Yeah, it did, and it sparked this discussion, and I'm actually glad we've had it because it's made me even think more about, you know, what I think has been successful over the last year, even other games that I played and hated, you know, and how they're currently viewed today.
Yeah, and like you said there, I think these are actually some good last words before we wrap up the episode, though, is it's done the exact same thing for me, too, is that it's made me realize that, you know, a lot of people out there do take, you know, a lot of things for granted. And of course, because we're in this gaming sphere, you know, and have been a part of it for our entire lives, basically, it's the idea that you can enjoy a game unless there's more stuff always coming out for it. But like, I look at how many hours I put into Valheim last year. I haven't touched that game in a long while now, probably about like 8 or 9 months now. I haven't touched that game, but I put in enough time in that game to have gotten through everything that I felt like I could have. I know there's probably more I could have done, and I'm sure that there is, especially because there have been updates. But that's a game that sold really well at that point in time, had a good community for it, and also was enjoyable. I got a great experience out of it, but I haven't gone back to it yet because there's other games that are taking up my attention and time. It doesn't mean I'm not going to go back and revisit it. It just means that I felt like I had a great experience for what I paid, and I'm moving on to something else, and I will most likely go back to it, but there are other things that are taking up that time right now, though, anyway. New things to explore, new things to try out, even stuff just in normal life. I'm not criticizing Valheim because it couldn't retain my attention. I'm only saying that there was just other things I wanted to play, though, too. And I'll go back. You'll probably go back, too. You know, we'll all go check out some old stuff. It's just the thing, though, is that I'm not going to levy any criticism against Valheim because I'm not playing it anymore. All I'm going to say is that I felt I got a good value out of what I got, and I will go back to it at some point. And that's where I feel it's like that's where a game's where a game's longevity is how much value you actually got out of it at when you originally picked it up. Did you feel comfortable playing it? And do you feel that there's still enough quality of life in it to actually be able to go back to it? And I can safely say for a lot of these other games, Valheim, Counter-Strike, Halo Infinite, like Splitgate. I mean, I'm kind of looking here at like the games that I have on my desktop right now. PUBG. There's still enough going on in a lot of these that I'm still going to be like going back. And yeah, that's just my feeling on it. You know, the value's there. I have it. I'm just going to play other games until I see more updates and I'll go back to it.
I feel the same. I have tons of games that I purchase, and I'm really bad about purchasing games on release and not playing them, but I'm always looking for a specific thing when I'm wanting to play games, and I do buy games and play them and know that, you know, they will change in the future and I will come back to them and they're always going to be there for me. So, I've bought them, so they're mine to keep. But I'm not going to judge how I think how successful a game is based on, you know, my playtime, or, you know, what I felt of it, or what other people's feel of it, until, you know, I've actually fully experienced it myself. So
this game sparks joy. This game doesn't spark joy. Maybe that's the way we should put that there. But anyway, I think we've wrapped it up here enough though on that one. You think so?
Yeah.
All right.
I think so.
Well, then, oh my gosh. Well, that is it then for this week's NPCs Discussed, talking about the struggle with a game's longevity. With that, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning into this week's episode. Don't forget to check us out over on your favorite podcast platform of choice. You can pick us up on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Just search for the NPCs Podcast. Or, of course, if you are listening to us, you somehow discovered us somewhere, please subscribe on that platform so that way any new episode does get downloaded immediately to your device and you can listen to us that day. Of course, if you need to find a platform that we are on besides the ones I mentioned, go and check out our homepage, anchor.fm/the-npcs-podcast. All the links are there, not only to all the different platforms we're on. You can even listen to us through Anchor. You can check us out on our social media. You can check us out on our YouTube. All that stuff is right there on our anchor.fm page. Again, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to this week's NPCs Discussed. We will catch you all in the next one.
Bye-bye.